I am.
Corey's high.
Hi, I'm Stan Raven. I used to be from somewhere else, but I'm not there anymore. And you are listening to WTXC Acre 90.7 FM.
Common Ground is a private, not-for-profit organization offering dispute resolution services to the people in Columbia and Greene counties. Common Ground provides trained mediators who work to resolve the differences between two or more participants on issues including family, housing, business, workplace, school, and neighborhood disputes. The mediation process is informal, private, confidential, and voluntary. For more information, please contact Common Ground at 518-943-0523 or on our website www.commongroundinc.com.
Fridays on WGXC are made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Lee Gould of Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters like Lee are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties.
Hello and welcome to the Singularity Radio Program, broadcasting live from the snowblower repair facilities. That's right, people, get ready for it. Of the Catskill Maker Syndicate, located at 65 West Bridge Street in the heart of Catskill, also known as that weird place right next to the Juice Branch. We are here to answer any science or technology-related questions you may have. Please contact us at catskillmakersinfo@gmail.com or directly at www.singularity.tech. That's thingularity.tech. And now, tonight's members and guests, roll call. How is everybody doing?
From the top.
Cody, how you doing?
Good. I'm here.
Is Albert here doing well?
Corey here, okay.
This is Tom Ditto.
Ben's here, doing all right.
Great.
All right. Anybody got any projects or any news items that's bugging or itching them to get out? Nothing?
Well, yeah.
Albert, how you doing? What you got?
Me? What do I got? Oh, not a whole lot going on at the moment. Just a lot of yard work and maintenance. I finished building myself an office in the garage. I'm using it now, so. / workspace. Gonna add in some more desktop and a standing height workbench, but it's my current office. I'm not in there now because it's too echoey. I need more on the walls. It would be super echoey. I'm inside the house now.
Cool.
Is it as clean as you wanted it to be? Is it like a clean room?
Well, I mean, there's a door and windows. It's sealed up. I sweep the floor regularly. I built the desks into the wall so that there's no legs coming down to the ground, which makes it easier to clean up.
Oh, neat. Okay.
Sweet. Now I just need a centralized vacuum system.
Yeah, well, there's going to be an exhaust on at some point. Maybe not centralized air. That would be nice, though.
Ben, what you got going on over there?
Just a general design for smart TVs.
Smart TVs. Oh, God. Ooh,
why is that? Please tell.
So I got a call at, about 4 o'clock this afternoon, and then I was on the phone with a customer for about an hour and a half, walking them through their smart TV, and I was just, dumbfounded, gobsmacked how difficult this was for this human being to do.
Now, is that really saying anything about the human being, or is it saying something about smart TV?
I think it's a little bit of both, because it's like, your target demographic is like older Americans watching shows on a television, and yet you made it very difficult for an older American to watch television shows.
Hmm.
So what you're saying is everybody should just get cable.
No, I don't like that either, but... I think in general, I think the smart TV guys, as much as I hate to say this, is they should steal Apple's look and feel.
Steal Apple's what?
Yeah, you broke up a little bit, bud.
Oh, I'm sorry. Steal Apple's look and feel as far as UI and usability.
That would
okay,
be
so make
extremely
things
smart.
Simple, straightforward, and easy to do.
Bingo.
Me not having to go through like this arcane ritual of which buttons you gotta press and when and what info to enter to figure out how to set up your TV?
Oh, well, yes, there's that, and there's just like the physical like hieroglyphs that are on a remote, like most people don't understand.
You know, as much as I hate Vizio, that's one thing that they have right, is that they have buttons specifically for the streaming service that you want to watch, at least a select few of them.
I'm also pretty sure Vizio's getting sued for spying on its customers.
Yep, they certainly are. That's why I hate them, but they know how to make a remote.
That's
understandable.
That's why we hate smart TVs, because they're basically spying on you and you can't stop it.
One of our members was involved in a lawsuit with a smart TV.
We're not supposed to talk about that.
We're not going to talk about that. Oh, okay.
I see. Oh, okay.
Following a minute has been retracted.
What I think I am at liberty
it's hearsay
to tell
anyways.
You is...
Hearsay. There you go. Allegedly.
One of our nerds was basically... Who keeps an eye on everything that occurs in his network, because that's how he is, was checking out his network activity one day and was noticing that his TV was constantly trying to contact a home server and send it a whole bunch of data. He never agreed to anything. The TV never told him that it was going to collect this data or contact this and that, and hence he's a key player in the lawsuit now.
It might have told him it. You know, in those BS CYAELAs.
No. That's the point. No. That was the point of the lawsuit, is because they didn't—they did not mention it anywhere. They're just like, they just started collecting the data, and that's the dirty part of it.
That's pretty juicy. No, what's really dirty is that now that they've included that, they can't get sued again. That's the dirty part. Because they know nobody's going to fucking read that shit.
Language.
And,
Yeah, nobody reads end-user license agreements. They really shouldn't give businesses the kind of protection that they offer, because it's not understandable by the average person, and
it's all in legalese.
Right, and it's in a form of language that's not how people normally think. So there's a clever choice of language that makes it seem even misleading.
Well, not to mention the fact that they're like 50 pages long. Nobody's got the time to read an entire agreement.
Correct, yeah.
But that's how you become part of the human scent iPad. Look it up.
They're also
just take a few minutes to, we didn't get a smart TV in, our household, so, just take a few minutes to search for them, Not that hard,
Not smart TVs, you mean?
Yeah, not smart TVs, yeah.
Dumb TVs are awesome. That's what I have in my living room. I almost sort of trust it. But I mean, nowadays everybody should be like Elvis, sitting there with freaking with a handgun in their hand, ready to shoot the TV.
Oh, did Elvis shoot his TV? I'm not aware of that story.
There was like a rumor story where he got mad at it and just shot it.
Yeah, and it's something that's been, you know, parodied a billion times, so who knows what the truth was.
All right.
So, that's what Ben had to slog through today.
Well, not just that, but that was the worst part.
Well, that ain't
no,
too bad.
No good parts, huh?
I got to write some Python code. That was a positive.
That's really great. I'm glad that there's a positive part to dealing with, running a modern ISP.
What was the Python code to govern?
Basically, it was doing some provisioning on the network switches and the various systems that we have. So I'm just sort of familiarizing myself with it and trying to clean it up and get it to work.
Nice, good.
Automation.
And you're using Python only, or do you use anything else like Bash or something?
I use Java. The billing system is all based in Java, so I had to, and the database that they use is Progress, which is a very weird one, and they have a JDBC. So the natural sort of inclination there is, you know, you have to use Java EE, and what am I using? I'm using, Tomcat, and I created some RESTful services that sit on top of their DB to pull some stuff out because they block the APIs that allow me to call the parts that I want.
They're blocking.
Okay, now you're breaking up a little bit.
Oh my gosh.
Sorry about that. ADSL is not our friend.
Yeah, that's not true. Tell it's your connection, but hey, it's 2020. This is what we have to deal with.
In Catskill, it is.
I think this is all over. If you listen to any network broadcast television, there's a lot of people that are calling into the show, and you just hear them dropping out, and you can hear their horrible internet service just screwing with the broadcast. It sucks. Tom, how are you doing over there?
I muted myself. I was afraid that the noise of the fan here would just carry over and that my voice would not be the only thing you heard. You hear the fan?
Nice, sound good, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. Tell us what's been up.
It's nice to have fans. I guess it has more than one meaning. Well,
at least the show has a fan now, you know.
I've been looking at the Zeeman effect. You know, familiar with that? It's
the Zima effect, where if you drink too many Zimas, people hate you.
Well, there was a Dutch physicist named Pieter Zeeman who discovered that there were colors between the colors if you looked in a spectrograph. Something that was very hot. In between the lines, there were more lines that appeared when there were strong magnetic fluxes around the glowing material. And that's an interesting thing, is that he discovered something between the lines. They've eventually found a use for it. I think it's the basis of the MRI, where you go into the hospital and they slip you into something that makes a lot of noise, and it's a super cool magnet creating an enormous amount of magnetic flux, and so it makes your water molecules stand on end one way or another, and they can see inside of you because you're made out of mostly out of water. MRIs are kind of nice. They don't apparently have the side effects of x-rays. They ionize your DNA and they can cause all kinds of bad things to happen, but...
genital damage, which is why whenever I get an x-ray at the dentist's office, they put a big lead apron over me.
Over the part they're not looking at.
Exactly.
And of course, the person operating the x-ray leaves the room, so you're kind of on your own. You and the x-ray. Well, x-rays are very interesting, too. Not too bad they're damaging, but... apparently, you can really crank up the magnetic flux, and it doesn't affect you in the same manner. But back in 100 and whatever 20 years ago, this guy Zeeman noticed this little thing between the lines, you know. And I began to wonder what haven't we seen, you know, between the lines? If you have the ability to look at the colors so precisely that you can see between the colors. I mean, maybe there's something lurking down there, like string theory or something. I mean, if you really, you know, if you really stretch something out that way, that's what's been preoccupying me. Sounds silly. Excuse me, mad scientist. I'll go mute myself. I'm a bad boy.
Look, many ideas have started out as mad science. It's worth experimenting with.
Yeah, if you're thinking normal, you're not going to make any sort of advancement. Okay, now, anybody got any news items to talk about? Things happening that have stoked your interest or ticked you off?
Well, I've read recently that SpaceX's satellites are extremely hard to deal with, to the point that they just haven't found a way to eliminate them, the effect of their passing for astronomy.
Oh yeah, the astronomers are. First of all, the amateur astronomers have been complaining all across the board and across the globe. Now, professional astronomers are starting to throw their hat in the ring and complain about all the stuff that Starlink is getting in the way of.
Yeah, I mean, this article on ARS Technica has an image of what they call wide field. It's 2.2 degrees across, but it comes from a 4-meter telescope, and it's just streaked with lines, light that got reflected by these Starlink satellites.
Lines that shouldn't be in the pretty pictures the astronomers are trying to take.
I mean, I don't even know if it's really a pretty picture, because if you look at it, it's not particularly artistic in any way. It's from the Dark Energy Camera. So...
okay,
my guess
fine.
Is that they're actually
it's not
making
artistic,
scientific...
then it's getting in the way of data.
Yeah, it's actually interfering with, you know, research.
Well,
the important stuff.
If you look at what they're doing, it's so temporary. You know, they want everyone to have high speed internet, so they're putting up enough satellites to blanket the entire globe, so everyone's within the beaming area of the individual satellites briefly while they fly by, and then they're all talking to each other so they know when to multiplex and switch over, so it has the effect of being able to beam down constantly. But we've been using geostationary satellites for cable TV. The problem is that they're so far away at 23,000 miles that you can't send anything to a geostationary satellite. So the solution was to get really close to the planet, and then you could go both ways. So that's the justification for this beehive activity. It's not just SpaceX. They're just one of the companies that are doing it.
Yeah, so. There are, OneWeb is also launching satellites into orbit to do the same thing with pretty much the same tactic. And the closest that you're talking about, that's why it works in the first place. But the latency that Elon Musk was promising for Starlink so that people could do professional gaming through it has not been reached yet. The latency numbers so far kind of suck less than cable modems.
Yeah, well,
now suck more.
Now you can do gaming from, you know, places where previously there wasn't internet. But it's a very temporary thing with a permanent consequence, because it's hard to get rid of these orbiting devices. They're up there for good.
Yeah, we're surrounding ourselves with space junk.
I don't think that's necessarily true in the SpaceX case. I mean, since they're in the near Earth orbit, they should rot within 5 to 6 years if they're not if they're unpowered, and
that's
should burn up in the atmosphere.
Well, I don't know.
5 years to decay.
I don't know if it's 5 or 6, or you know, more like. Well, the point of it is that it's a wild west. There are no rules. You could put it at any distance. Maybe he's making a claim that these satellites will self-destruct, but no one was there to say that there was a rational way to approach this, so that there'd be only one company doing it, and it would minimize the amount of it's not just interference with astronomy, it's danger to one another, it's danger to any object that you're trying to put in the vicinity of it or move through it. These are very high velocity projectiles. If they happen to hit anything, they just explode in little splinters, and that creates more space junk. But it's a wild west. There are no rules, and that's part of the problem with it, is that
There are rules. The FCC governs this sort of thing.
Does it, though?
No, yeah, that's why OneWeb and Starlink had to apply for permits to put these things there. They had to negotiate where they were going to be put and how long they were going to be there, which is why the automatic decay feature was part of it. They didn't want a ton of space junk just sitting there hanging out forever.
So the only agency having authority over this activity is the FCC?
In all the research that I have done so far, that is the only government agency that's been named.
Okay,
there might be something
that's
higher
fine
up.
And all, but we're on a planet, and the United States is not the whole planet. Like, there's other cultures.
I'm sorry, where have you been?
Where
are the world police? We control everything.
Yeah. My bad. I forgot. I took a little vacation from reality. Let me just come back to it now.
Have you heard of copyright law? We tell the world what to do with everything they own, except for China and Russia. Russia tells us what to do. We tell the rest of the world what to do.
I respectfully disagree. I respectfully disagree with your view on geopolitics.
And in which point do you differ?
The part where it's like a schoolyard bully.
Who's the bully?
Everybody's bullying each other, it seems.
Have you ever taken a social studies class? Bullying is how you get things done.
Nobody else is gonna offer any insight on this? That's fine.
I will rule this world with an iron fist.
I don't think there are better words used than bullying, but...
Okay. Go ahead.
Coercion, extortion...
But I can't find them.
Domination.
I mean, I do see Cody's point. I mean, there's no real organizing body saying, like, all right, you can or can't do this. You know, like, there's nothing to release the Russians or the Chinese from launching their own, you know, mesh satellite internet.
Which leads to some fun news articles, like different countries shooting down each other's satellites.
Of course, on Netflix, there are satellite-destroying satellites, right?
Oh, yeah. There are.
There's several levels of them. There's standard... there's a word for them. They're called, like, monitoring satellites, or... what we would call a spy satellite. Basically, you could tell what they are when they're changing trajectories without any particular reason. Because when you move a satellite around in orbit, it costs fuel, and that's a lot of money. So when we're adjusting some of our satellites and we watch the Russians adjust other satellites to keep in tow, they're basically keeping up to make sure that they can keep track of all the transmissions coming from our satellites. We do the exact same thing. And there are satellites in orbit under Russian and American control, you know, differently, that are designed to destroy other satellites should it be needed. I'm not specifically aware of anything from the Chinese, but I would bet a large sum of money they have the similar capability. They're not all weather satellites.
Well, of course not. And SpaceX has gotten some contracts now to launch for the National Reconnaissance Office, the top secret spy satellites and such.
Interesting.
They're quite good at launches, so, I mean...
And they'll probably sell you some relatively cheap space to put your telescope out in outer space if you're tired of the lines from their satellites.
They're getting too much power. Mark my words. This
Ooh,
is part
SpaceX?
Of the military. Yeah, this is how the military-industrial complex actually takes over the world. SpaceX will design Skynet, not somebody else. Trust me. Skynet will over Starlink. It will completely take over all of the information. It will control what you see, think, and hear. And then, that's it. It won't have to take over the world. It'll just control the humans already.
And Eisenhower and James Cameron say, "We told you so."
Yep.
I think Bezos is a good close contender. He has similar ambitions.
Jeff Bezos is a saint. Don't you dare talk about that man.
He also has Amazon Web Services, which is powering a huge swath of the internet these days, so that data is passing through his servers.
Exactly. So he knows everything you do anyway. He has all your naked pictures, not the other way around.
So forget the satellites. The satellites only serve an infrastructure that he has a large share of.
Wait, Bezos doesn't have satellites?
They will. Quite soon.
Are you speculating, or is this
No,
like
you must have
read?
Not read the article. It's what? In the article that Amazon is also launching satellites at the same altitudes as SpaceX.
Oh, goody. Hopefully they can launch entire warehouses, so that way they can space drop my next order directly to my house. No, that went too far.
Ben, you had something to say? Please.
One hour is not is too long of a wait for me to get something delivered.
I like B&H better.
B&H Photo? Wow.
Yeah, I mean, if you're buying like consumer grade stuff, I mean, it's quicker, faster. Like, I can order stuff and have it within a day.
Honestly, I used to think that website was fake. I didn't think they were real.
They're real.
I've been getting delivery times like that from Newegg, too, recently.
I didn't know until I asked Brian about it. He's like, oh yeah, they're actually a real thing. They had a brick-and-mortar outlet somewhere in New York City. Just because their prices were so ridiculous.
Yeah, they have a physical store in New York, down in the city. That's why it can... at least if you live on the East Coast, it'll just come in the mail, like, the next day.
That's kind of awesome.
Well, it's nice when you have, like, a good distribution center. Rock Auto is similar. They have, like, a whole bunch of warehouses all over the country, so when they send something to you, it's pretty quick. Okay, since we've got a bit of a lull, I'll take this time and let everybody know you are listening to WGXE, Acre, Hudson, Catskill. 90.7 FM and on that internet dial at wgxe.org, radio for open ears.
Oh, and Joe, in case you were curious about how many satellites the FCC has actually approved, SpaceX has permission to launch about 12,000. OneWeb has approval for 2,000, and Amazon has approval for about 3,200.
Wow.
Mm. Yeah.
I use satellite tracking software because, I just do. And every day, let's say every week, I'm watching more Starlink things show up. They're starting to cover all of the major continents. It's almost complete. It's like watching like an evil scheme just happen in real time in front of me.
Well, they're looking to launch something like 40,000, no?
What was that?
Oh, go ahead.
Yes, they are looking at 40,000.
Oh, yeah, and they did space for about 30,000 more. At least according to the ARS article.
That's a lot of satellites blocking a lot of view.
I'm not sure we'll be able to see anything real in the night sky after all of those go up.
I would just like to kind of point, well, those should, once they're... All right. First of all, the main complaint so far about Starlink is that as the satellites are ascending to their final orbit, they're visible and they're casting a lot, they're reflecting a lot of sunlight back at Earth. Once they're in their final orbit, they're supposedly not supposed to be visible anymore.
Okay.
No, they're visible because if they come between the telescope and what you're looking at, they cause an occultation. And that occultation messes up the very fine observations that powerful telescopes are doing. So even when you can't see the light coming off of them, they're still casting shadows that are damaging to the observations that astronomers do.
Oh, good times. More good news for 2020. Okay, guys, we're going to take a quick break. I'm going to play a little bit of Weird Al for you, as is standard for Thingularity. Be back in a minute.
Those were the good old days. good old days.
Ah, that was a good old days by Weird Al. Trying to get everybody to remember back before, you know, everything started falling apart. Okay, we were just talking about something interesting during the break. What was that?
Online voting. Specifically national, you know, election-style voting. Not just polls and whatnot.
So going beyond the mail and apparently the faulty post office.
Going to the email. Probably not, right?
Because that's way more secure and reliable.
Yeah, definitely not email. But, you know, mobile apps or... Seems like mobile apps are more favorable, I think, than like an online portal through a web browser. Seeing as people are moving more and more towards their phones for web consumption anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say it's probably the most heavily thought about area because, well, almost everyone has a phone or a tablet that's basically... a phone without the radio.
Right.
One of the things that would change if the internet was used for voting is the frequency of the event. So you could, in theory, have political parties that use the internet for, you might call it polling, or at least some form of a sampling of public opinion, and make that party responsible to the results of these polls. In that manner, you would not have to change the representative form of government that's already ingrained. You could say our political party responds to the members of this party when they are polled, and those polls could be frequent. Now, when the polls become frequent enough, it changes the way in which the voting is affected by interference, such as the kind of hacking that represents a threat. If the polling takes place with great separations between voting events, if you have groups of people that are interested in a particular issue, then they participate heavily over many votes over an extended period of time, and then the representative party responds to that. This is what I call a self-selected group.
So when you're running for office, Tom.
Well, I'm not obviously going to run for office, but I'm interested in it, and I did pursue it in the 1970s when this electronic sampling became possible. So I set up a lecture center where a group of cable broadcasters came together. There were about 170 of us from around the country, and I conducted a poll that had a binary tree logic. So there was a yes-no question followed by 4 yes-no questions followed by 8 yes-no questions followed by 16 and then
so 30. Did you kick off electronic voting?
Well, in this particular case, the room was wired, so it didn't have anything to do with encryption or anything like that. But what it showed was that if you have many options as the final layer, the final result, you can get subtle answers instead of a simple yes-no and a basic issue. That basic issue gets resolved in a series of specifically targeted actions, and they can span a spectrum. So I did this over, you know, 10 questions, and we conducted it in an hour and a half or something like that. And then I watched as this particular organization went on for a couple more years, and they pretty closely matched what they wanted. They took actions from traditional administrative methods that were very similar to what they had polled or said they wanted to do as a group in this polling method. Now, what's interesting about it, it's not particularly easy for someone with a lot of charisma to get on top of this. It requires political science. You really have to know what the issues are in all the possible variations.
So you can't just have a Kennedy or a Trump kind of bumble their way through.
That's right. It's not a yes-no with a huge consequence. It's a whole bunch of yeses and nos with many consequences. And the people who conduct these polls may not be the people who are on camera or in Congress or whatever the the figurehead is. But if they have agreed to resign, if they don't follow the instructions that they get from the population that's running the government, then you have a change in the constitutional structure at a level beyond the constitutional structure. So it's not revolutionary. It doesn't turn over anything. It just says, we'll take a political party and we'll make that the members of that political party responsible for these many, 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 many votes. And then these many, many, many votes are carried out by self-selected groups. So, you know, it takes your time to do this. So farmers would all gather around when it was farm policy, and educators would all gather around when it was educational policy. And when these policies were refined down to a point that they were satisfactory to the groups that had the most invested in them, you'd end up with, I guess, laws or policies or whatever that were targeted properly for the population that was most likely to be affected by that. If it was a really big thing, then everyone would participate, I imagine, to the point that they...
But very few things are a big thing, and then you get a whole plurality of those laws that or policies that pander to particular interest groups, like you mentioned, the education or farming or manufacturing, and it's not always in the best interest. Is this what you're saying?
Yeah, there were a couple of things that interested me at the time. This is the 1970s, and I was very interested in how cable was going to be regulated, because there's an issue of monopoly control, since certainly at the time any one company that laid out the cable link could jack up their prices without any constraints unless there was some kind of regulation. And at the same period, I was interested in patent law, and I wanted to know how the patent law was going to be changed, because it was going to be changed, and the copyright laws were being changed around 1976 to 1980. These were momentous changes for me, because that's what I that's what I was dealing with. And it's a very small group of people who have a stake in that, but I was very interested in my group of people would have participated at the expense of the time that they would otherwise be going to the beach or whatever people like to do with their time. So
wow. Okay, Tom.
It sounds like a pretty complex way of solving a problem that is solved by runoff voting. I mean, runoff voting would be...
Stick to physical voting.
It would be less accurate, I think, than a binary tree of questions, but probably a little easier to implement.
Paper trail.
Well, it has to do with the frequency. So if everybody is able to vote every day or every week, but every frequently, it changes the whole nature of how you respond to public...
It would be closer to true democracy.
It would be direct participatory democracy without overthrowing what we currently have, which is a representative form of democracy that was necessitated by the fact that when it was created, the best you could do was to get 100 people in a room at a time and have them iron stuff out and put them to the public vote every 2, 4, or 6 years. Here, we have a forum that's large enough with the internet so that everyone can participate whenever they want to. And you have to take that into account in how you structure your voting. I could go on.
Speaking
like
of voting, it seems that we're having some issues now with vaccines being presented for some states. Everybody's being told that they're going to have to get ready for vaccinations to allow voting to happen in person. Have you guys heard about this?
Mm-hmm. I have not.
The CDC has been saying like November 1st, states should be ready for a vaccine coming out.
Yeah, what do you guys think are the chances of that actually happening?
I don't think so, because I haven't heard of anything that's passed, fully through testing yet.
Yeah, I saw a headline about testing.
Oh, we've been joined by Brian X, the cat wrangler and former sound engineer, at least until we get together physically. Hi,
well,
Brian.
Let's see if he actually pipes up.
Oh, he did.
The interwebs are here and all.
Yeah, I was speaking over him, so.
Brian, how you doing?
Okay.
What's your take on this vaccines to vote thing.
Well, I just joined and I was hearing what Tom was saying about this participatory democracy thing using, that's neat. But vaccines, no, we're not ready. Not unless we're going to pull a China and mandate alpha testing of possibly dangerous vaccines to the masses.
Eh, nothing less than what we did with Tuskegee.
Yeah, Oak Ridge, okay, that's a little injecting different. Things in the people.
Yeah,
that's like,
I don't want syphilis.
Well, hey, that's why mandated vaccines are great, right? Listen, don't get me wrong. I'm very pro-vaccine. Vaccines are very good. They're very good for the population. They're very good for even the people that are too stupid to take them. But you should still have the choice.
Exactly, exactly. Informed consent all the time.
So, but we have the vaccine centers set up right next to the voting center. So you walk into the one and then you walk into the next one.
Not sure how it's exactly supposed to work, but yeah, it's gonna be a big shock. I don't know what, it's some kind of political move, it seems.
Well, I'm glad that Brian could at least join us because we're rounding up on what would normally be the end of our show. However, we're doing WGXC a solid and we're extending our show a half hour to try to fill up some space. Normally we would start whiling out, but
you're stuck,
Brian,
with us for another 45 minutes.
And you're going to get basically an on-air preview of the after-hours show. You see, what we normally do is, after WGXC switches over our stream, we normally just, you know, keep on talking. Except that's when the drinks come out and we start relaxing and we start being able to talk any way we would like.
But we can't do that? Is that right? We can't do that?
We can't do that this time.
Okay.
We're just giving the extended time, but we're still bound by FCC rules and we're on air.
Just making sure.
So that's until 7:30. We're rounding up on 7 o'clock. So, Corey, do you have any history for us?
Why, yes, I do.
Or any other points of interest that you'd like to attend to?
No! History only!
Oh, right, here we go. September 1st, 1914, the last surviving specimen of the passenger pigeon died at the Cincinnati Zoo, rendering it extinct. September 2nd, 1752, the Julian calendar in Great Britain, Ireland, and the UK colonies entered its last days. The newly adopted Gregorian calendar, designed to better align with the equinoxes, skipped ahead 11 days, making the following day September 14th, and everybody's eyes crossed. UK was the sixth country to follow Pope Gregory XIII's decree issued in 1582. Russia didn't change until January 1918, and parts of China started in 1912, but didn't complete until the Communist Revolution in 1949.
Corey, I'm just going to ask you to just slow it down a little bit.
Yeah.
Sounds like there's some digital interference. Just want you to try to overcome.
Oh, okay. September 3rd, 1976. 5 months after its twin arrived, Viking 2 landed on Mars and took the first pictures of the surface. September 4th, 1888, George Eastman...
Didn't the Viking lander also detect biological activity, or am I thinking of the wrong Mars lander?
I thought that wasn't more towards the 90s. September 4th, 1888, George Eastman was issued the patent for his box camera and registered the trademark of Kodak. The design was Eastman Kodak's first mass-produced camera, bringing photography to the masses. September 7th, 1936, the last known Tasmanian tiger died at the Hobart Zoo. September 8th, 1854, the spread of cholera was halted in London when Dr. John Snow removed the handle of the Broad Street water pump. After mapping the outbreaks, he suspected contamination of community water. An investigation of the Broad Street site revealed raw sewage from a leaking cesspool had contaminated the well water.
Yes.
Yummy.
Basic hygiene saves the day. Plumbing.
Soap is the greatest medical invention of all time.
I've got an article about that too. But we'll wait, we'll save it.
Don't drink anything that's touched poop.
Yes, don't drink anything that's touched poop.
1930, Scotch tape was developed by Richard G. Drew of 3M, which up to then had only made sandpaper. September 9th, 1926, through stations bought from AT&T after they decided to withdraw from radio, RCA created the National Broadcasting Company, NBC, which began broadcasting in November. September 11th, 1978, British medical photographer Janet Parker became the last known person to die of smallpox.
Hooray?
When was that again?
September 11th, 1978.
The last known person to die of smallpox.
Yes, I believe she was like working in a lab close to another lab that was studying, you know, the disease as part of the eradication effort.
They didn't realize they should have been working in a level 4 biohazard lab.
Yeah, I think they suspect that the somehow something got into the vents and got into, you know, the lab she was in.
Did they have a level 4 biolab back then?
I don't think so.
September 12th. Go on.
No, I was just going to say, the labs nowadays are pretty safe. Like, all those individual suits, like, the if you're watching a sci-fi movie and somebody's working in a lab and they work on a dangerous disease and they get a break in the suit, they don't get infected. Those suits are positively pressurized. The rooms they're in are actually negatively pressurized, pumping everything out through some killer fans and a whole bunch of, like, disinfecting stuff. So those labs are pretty well set up. It's not going to happen like that nowadays, thankfully.
Please but continue. But it's not a cinematic. September 12, 1793, an outbreak of yellow fever in Philadelphia led to Maryland Governor Thomas Sim declaring the first quarantine in U.S. history when he stopped commerce from Maryland to Philadelphia.
That sounds racist.
Well, it'll be far from the last quarantine. 1992, science mission specialist Mae C. Jemison of the Shuttle Endeavor became the first African-American woman in space. September 13th, 1898, Reverend Hannibal Williston Goodwin was issued the patent for his invention, nitrocellulose, transparent, flexible photographic film pellicles. 1 year later, he sold one roll for $250 to Thomas Alva Edison.
$250?
Oh, for $2.50. Yeah.
Wow.
Ooh. Yeah. While investigating the transmission of yellow fever in Cuba, physician Jesse Lazar was bitten by a mosquito, his death 2 weeks later, proving the insect was a carrier of the disease. September 14th, 2015, exactly 100 years after Einstein published his general theory of relativity, the laser interferometer gravitational wave observatory, or LIGO, made the first detection of gravitational waves.
And it just made another major discovery, detecting the largest known object ever. Like 142 suns. This is bigger than scientists thought could happen. The two things that had to combine for this to be made were themselves bigger than we predicted things ever to be. So the universe is strange, and we have no clue what we're doing.
And this is referring to black holes.
Not even scratch the surface.
They are almost 100% certain that it was black hole merging. Unless it's some new exotic form of matter, it's kind of got to be that.
Okay. Interesting.
We should be talking about singularities, and we'll figure it all out.
Okay, September 15th, 1904... first meteorological research balloon in the U.S. was released in St. Louis. September 16th, 1884, ophthalmologist Carl Koehler became the first to apply cocaine as a local anesthetic for an eye surgery. 1900.
Wait, nice. Wait. Did he put it right in their eyes?
I mean, why not?
I would hope he diluted it, you know, and did like, you know, an eyedropper, but
It's still used. It's still used as a local anesthetic. My cousin had an eye surgery, and they gave him some drops for, like, afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Cocaine drops?
Yeah. Yeah. And I tried. I tried. This was years ago.
Okay, I'm kind of picturing.
Anyway, I put a couple in my eyes. My eye got numb.
Your eye went numb?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's a local anesthetic. Whenever you see like one of the cop movies where a cop like puts his hand in the white powder and then puts it on his cheek, that's testing for a numbness. That's what it would do, and it would be an almost good positive for cocaine.
Yeah, because I believe that's part of how he discovered it, was that, you know, someone, you know, put it on somebody's tongue and they recorded it going numb, or maybe he was testing it himself.
I'm kind of picturing an ophthalmologist like, a little for you, a little for me. Here we go.
Well, I think
I'm sure the natives. The natives who grew coca leaf probably knew about the numbing and stimulant effect of it.
It was used as a stimulant for up in the Andes, like in the high mountains for...
Yeah.
Yeah, still is. Yeah. If you're working on a little farm or a little slash and burn thing, people are just chewing that all day and working.
Yeah, I was about to say, either chewing it or smoking it.
But I believe the doctor, the European doctor who like isolated it and extracted the from the leaf, you know, the pure substance, died of a heart attack like a few months after discovering it.
Go figure.
Not a coincidence, huh?
Hey, this is a really amazing discovery. I'm really excited. I'm really
My whole life is clearly laid out ahead of me.
Oh,
okay.
Corey, you got more?
We're halfway through the month.
Yeah, 1908. Former carriage maker William Croppo Billy Durant founded General Motors. By the end of the month, they began gobbling up competition, buying in quick succession Buick, Oldsmobile, Cadillac, and Pontiac. Durant would lose control of the company in 1910. So that's sort of an early monopoly. September 17th, 1931, the earliest versions of the 33 RPM long playing records were first demonstrated by RCA at the Savoy in New York, but the high cost caused them to flop. Wouldn't it be until 1948 when Columbia began mass production that the format took off. September 18th, 1927, Columbia Phonograph Broadcasting Company broadcasting system began broadcasting through 47 radio stations. After a year's worth of loss, Columbia Records sold to a group of investors who took Phonograph out of the name to rechristen the network CBS. 1980, Cuban cosmonaut Arnaldo Tamayo Mendez became the first person of color and the first Latin American in space, joining the 7th International crew under the Intercosmos program on board Soyuz 38 to conduct experiments with sugar crystal growth in space.
Awesome.
Sugar, crystal growth, and space. Are we talking about cocaine again?
No, we're talking about the other drug that comes from the Caribbean. Sugar.
Oh, that's
the white
addictive
death.
Hey, the great white death kills more than all the other drugs combined.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. That's a better one. That's a better joke than I was going to make about meth. September 20th, 1952, Alfred Hershey and Martha Chase published a report confirming DNA holds hereditary data. September 23rd, 1949, President Truman announced to America that the USSR had detonated its first atom bomb recently. September 26th, 1772, New Jersey passed the first law in the U.S. to license medical practitioners, exempting those who didn't charge for their services, pulled teeth, or bled patients. And there is still no actual federal law for this. 1991, four men and four women began a two-year residence in Biosphere 2, an airtight self-contained structure in Oracle, Arizona, designed to replicate Earth's environment, or Biosphere 1.
Biodome!
Biodome.
That was coming up. The sealed structure contained a 900,000-gallon ocean, a rainforest, a desert, agricultural areas, and a human habitat.
and it failed in real life.
Yeah. Yeah, problems included their problems during their stay included diet restrictions due to limited agricultural productivity, reduced oxygen levels, plus added nitrous oxide levels from soil microorganisms. Scientists weren't impressed.
The point from this to be taken is that when humans are in 100% control of their environment, they will kill themselves.
Were these trained humans? Such as the ones we might want to send to Mars? Or
yeah, they were scientists. They should have been, like, they were the best of what we could have sent in there to not waste the millions of dollars that were spent on it, and they still screwed it up.
Are you sure we don't want a reality show to determine who goes to Mars, Cody?
It's very tempting, I gotta say. The pressures of being on a reality show, you know, they very closely emulate the kind of stresses that you might experience on the surface of Mars.
Okay,
you know, hostile alien planet.
We put them all in a big, giant, sand-covered pit that looks like the surface of Mars. We get some of that cocaine stuff you guys were talking about. We throw that in there. All right, we have some timers going, and then we have, like, keep going until there's only, say, 40 of you left.
Yeah, but, I mean, if you think about it this way, I mean, if you sent the reality TV contestants to Mars, you could clean up Earth a little bit.
Oh, I like the way of thinking.
Wow.
Well, one of my first ideas was, well, let's send Kanye to be president over there instead.
You realize that's literally how the Western Hemisphere was founded.
Yeah, yeah.
Christopher Columbus was just some dude. The guys he took with him, those were all basically lowlifes that they wanted to get rid of. Everybody thought they were basically spending a little bit of money to get rid of a whole big pile of losers and send them over the edge of the earth.
Yeah, because then about a century later, let's get rid of some of our religious fanatics. That won't come back to bite us.
Turns out they all come back. At least Columbus came back with spices and food.
Well, let's turn Australia into a giant prison colony. Okay.
Hey, it worked out, sort of.
And last date, September 27th, 2003, aboard an Ariane 5 rocket, the Smart 1 exploration probe, the first European mission to the moon, blasted off from the European Space Agency's launch center in French Guiana. And that's it for science history.
Do we have to do a station ID every 30 minutes?
Yes. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Agra, Catskill, Hudson. This is Thangularity.
Wow. Thank you, Corey.
Turn it up.
Short and sweet.
So that was an Ariane rocket?
A what?
I might have mispronounced that. Ariane.
Ariane. A-R-I-A-N-E.
I'm just picturing, like, more white people sending penis-shaped objects into the sky.
Man asserting his dominance over the skies.
Yeah, that's not gonna happen. Space, nature, and the planet are always going to win.
So, Brian, you had an interesting article, and it kind of ties back into the cholera thing. You know, the connection of raw sewage to disease. You know what I'm talking about?
No, I can't remember any of that.
Oh, you're kidding me.
We don't want to touch the poop water. Poop water, Brian, come on.
So, this one's called, Brian sent this, How the University of Arizona Used Number 2 to Solve Its Number 1 Problem, the Coronavirus.
Oh, yeah, this is great. You can find a lot of things out from poo, all right? If you just check, like, a city sewage system, you could find out what kind of drugs they're doing. By the way, the number one drug in all cities across the globe, caffeine.
So, rather than test people directly, the university has been sampling wastewater to catch cases of COVID-19 early.
Oh yeah, that was Arizona State University. They tested the dorm output, right?
You're the one who sent the article, man. I assume you read it.
No, that's what it was. Arizona State. They found out what was going on. Like, they found a yep. bloom of COVID by looking at the main drain coming out of the.
They're looking at 20 different buildings. It says.
Yeah,
out of, dorms, out of
the dorm buildings, and the
student union center. I'm assuming a lot of different buildings on this campus.
Yeah, but they found a breakout in one of the dorms with that.
It's a similar method to the cluster testing that they're starting to do, where instead of testing like one person individually, they will test like an entire region, like an entire county at once. They could throw like 20 people into one test bed, test it. If it tests negative, everybody's a negative. If it tests positive, someone more or more in that group tested positive, and then they have to go back individually. It's a good efficiency step. But in this case, we're just testing like one big poop pipe.
Didn't you send another one, Brian, about the importance of pee traps and how it came into?
No, that was the pee trap, or the gas trap that's on the bottom of every sink. In China, is almost not used anywhere, and that probably contributes to their breakouts of disease all the time when you're in a giant apartment block and you catch SARS from somebody 20 floors above you because it goes flying out of your toilet in a big giant air gush.
Yeah, you did send it. You're oddly your plumbing toilet, obsessed at this point.
Yeah,
I think you're plumbing obsessed, man. So this blog post was, "What's that smell? Today in Guangzhou is 27 degrees Celsius and clear." This was back in 2012. And it's like photos of places where you'd expect a pee trap to be, like hotel rooms or public bathrooms. They're not there.
Okay. Anything else, Brian, that you want to add since you're one of the latecomer?
No, I'm kind of on a sketchy connect right now, so I shouldn't be checking in so much.
Are you driving?
Yeah, I think he is.
Passenger seat.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha.
Driving while broadcasting.
And that would explain the crappy connection. Okay, if we're starting to get towards the end of the show, where we'll be running out of time before we know, does anybody have anything they want to get in?
Yes. Code.
What you got?
Go for it.
So a student was being graded by an AI for their history, so their little writing assignments. So what they did is they would write two arbitrary sentences of just grammatically correct, and then they would add specific keywords that were associated at the end of it that were just total nonsense, and then they found out that they could increase their grade.
Say what?
Where did this occur?
Hold on, I'm looking at it. I was scanning Slashdot and I found it, and I was like, that is amazing.
A student was being graded by an artificial intelligence?
Exactly. They figured it out because so they were getting grades like immediately, you know, after they posted the assignment. So they're like, this is more than likely, I think, you know, one of their parents helped out and figured out this is most likely a AI grading you, and then started adding specific keywords and were getting, you know, perfect grades.
Don't sell them short. Those kids are pretty smart. But
wow, what a lazy way to try to game the system.
Are you kidding me? I'm sorry. Have you ever heard of...
No, you're not understanding. On the part of the teacher.
Yeah, have you ever heard of a Scantron and the need for number two pencils?
Yeah,
when I went to school, that's what they
one.
Did to us. Here's a slip. Fill out the bubbles. We're going to feed this into a computer, and we're going to assume it's grading you correctly. Yeah, that was like my... This is nothing new.
Well, universities have been using... when I went back to school back in 2000... we had to turn in our essays to something called Turnitin.com, and it compared your essays to like other students' essays for, you know, checking for plagiarism at that time. But it's been a thing, and you know, something along these lines. I didn't know about automatic grading, but as far as using computer algorithms to read people's papers, I mean, that's been going on for at least since 2000.
I mean, checking for plagiarism is more of a simple test than trying to see whether somebody's actually demonstrating comprehension or learning something.
Yeah, that's a bool value. That's going to tell you, yes, they plagiarized, no, they didn't. What Ben was talking about is somebody actually getting a grade based upon the AI's interpretation of their work. And it's not just, for instance, like they did to us, multiple choice questions. It sounds like this AI is interpreting their sentences, trying to act like a real, figure some things out and assign a grade to them. And to any of those kids out there that figured it out and learned to game the system, good for you.
Get the Ferris Bueller Award.
Yeah, I encourage all kinds of mischief of that nature.
Especially if that's what they're doing to you. Take control. A good example of that was this one guy that figured out that they were using SQL databases, MySQL databases, for sending out traffic infractions. And he realized that the plates would record the license plate. It would transfer the license plate into an alphanumeric string, you know, the plate number, and then the system would take that, store it, and then send out fines accordingly. The guy figured this out and then put several extra commands taped to his bumper that were SQL database dumping commands.
That's so great.
Well, okay. So what he did was he taped the commands to his bumper and drove in front of a traffic light and got like an instance that would be a ticket, like running a red light. It took his picture, read the code, processed the code, deleted his data from the database and all points of data that were previously recorded, refreshing the database from zero. So whenever he would roll through an intersection, he deleted all the tickets for anybody that would have gotten one before him.
That is perfect. Awesome.
That's some very sloppy. Always sanitize your input. Don't just trust the input.
Well, you know, this is how people figure out things like that. They start doing systems like this. This is years old. You can go look it up right now. MySQL ticket traffic, and you'll see the guy's car right there with his license plate and the MySQL commands on either side of it. It's beautiful.
Physical SQL injection.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Awesome.
On a more constructive note, what I did when I was teaching was I had a database of the questions, and then I gave everybody an initial quiz after the students were evaluated for the correct answers. They never saw that question again, but when they had a question that was wrong, that would be repeated so that... very quickly, everyone started getting individualized strips of questions drawn from this database of questions. If you had a unique set of questions, then you cribbed from the person sitting next to you. And as it turned out, one year I had identical twins who were very good at cribbing from each other, but they started to drift apart. And after a while, they were getting unique sets of quizzes with requirement that they individually figure out the answers. But in the end, when I did the evaluation for the class, I was surprised to see that the identical twins, despite the fact that they got different questions and different questions right and wrong, ended up with an identical score overall.
So that was just like a random like instance of them having about the same intelligence for that subject in your class.
It seemed to validate the approach that I was taking. And that's extensible, too, because what's happening now with remote learning is that you're going to have a class with 10,000 people in it. And how are you going to handle the interaction with this large number of people and still ensure that they're going to learn something in the process of taking the course, because you can't individually address their needs or unique characteristics. So this is one place where, I mean, this was an old computer program.
Do you think those kids had, like, do you think they could have gamed your test? Do you think they figured out the question issue and may have found a way to communicate the differences?
I don't think they did, but there was another facet. It was an art course, so they had to have individual projects. So they were forced to distinctly work okay. on something from one another, even
That's
if they were given
individual.
Work together. I had a way of evaluating the art projects too, because I felt it would be unfair for me, especially in this particular demographic. To impose my own aesthetic on art students. I mean, I was like much older than they were, and I had my own aesthetic.
But that's the point of being the teacher.
So I let them evaluate themselves, and when they were finished, you know, I really didn't have to do much work, except in one case where there was clearly a plagiarism component, I stepped in. But other than that, because there were 18 students and they had...
How did you determine that there was plagiarism?
I found the source of the... I found the source. I recognized what the student was doing. And, I got into trouble, too. He was very combative, and he insisted that I demonstrate that I had gotten to the bottom of this.
I got a question about your program. Would it... sort of increase the number of questions on it on an individual's test? You know, would it like slip in the questions they got wrong on the last test along with the ones that everybody else was getting as well?
I wasn't that sophisticated, but I certainly would have welcomed any improvements. It's just that I was working alone on this. It wasn't appreciated by the rest of the faculty. I was when they teach art in a community college, you're an adjunct, generally speaking. You're really on the bottom of the totem pole. And if you innovate or come up with something special, it would have been nice to have expanded upon it. It ran on the old MS-DOS operating system, and the only way I could use it after a while was just to go back to an older computer to run it, so I eventually abandoned it.
Oh, that's sad when you have to lose software like that. There's a couple pieces of software that I even ran on MS-DOS that I still wish I could run. A lot of it you still can. You can run like DOSBox and stuff like that on a modern system and still try to get that.
Yeah, I've been taught how to make XP appear on my Windows 7 program. Thank you, Cody.
Oh, you're very welcome. Speaking of languages like DOS, I've been trying to learn C#. So I'm not such a scrub when it comes to programming.
What motivated you to learn that?
Whoa,
why are you learning C#?
I don't
Ew.
Know.
It's clean, it's structured. Welcome to the dark side, Cody.
It's Microsoft tainted C.
But it's not Java.
Correct.
No offense, Ben. I mean, I'm sure it's very...
Look, no, Java ain't too bad.
I wrote C# years.
For learning purposes, Java, I think, is fine. You know, maybe you don't want to specialize in it or write a bunch of code, but to learn strong typing and object-oriented code and, you know, strong typing and to have good habits, you know. Learning PHP or Python or something as a first language sometimes gives people really bad habits.
Yeah, I wanted to write an extension for... the printer host software that we use, Repetier Host, which is only written in closed source C#. It only publishes like the API.
Gotcha.
Like the class descriptions and all that.
Ah, I see why you were delving into the C#, and all is forgiven.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just I had the rare benefit of being taught C++ in high school. If Mr. Knishel is listening, thanks, bud. You did me a solid. Yeah, as far as I can tell, the best way to go is to learn an actual programming language. And then scripts are easy. You could do Python, Bash, Perl. It doesn't really matter. You just kind of got to get used to it quick.
I can mess with scripts, you know, all day long, but... when it comes to actually sitting down and reading C++, even Python gets kind of hairy for me.
For that
I'm
sort
still
of thing,
a scrub.
in-person instruction for that sort of thing is a big help, because you get someone literally looking over your shoulder, just filling in the blanks for you, speeds things along a lot.
Yeah. Is anyone interested in the magnetic poles? Magnetic anomalies occurring here on Earth?
No, they've been shifting around, no?
They've been splitting into modules, I think, too.
Yeah, there's like weird nodules of magnetic... Well, this article calls it a pothole in space, but I'm going to say anomaly, because that's very Trekky. So it's in the South Atlantic, and kind of centered around St. Helena.
What is it?
That's the thing. They don't know. They don't know why it's happening.
It's more of the end of the world.
Yeah, I know, right? But they're referring back to some studies that show that this anomaly has occurred before, about 8 to 11 billion years ago. Wait, sorry, million years ago. And it might be a sort of a warning that the magnetic poles are about to shift, which is a process that occurs over hundreds of thousands of years, but
not lately.
No, we're overdue.
Things have been moving around a lot.
So what kind of bad stuff can happen with that? Anybody know? When the poles flip?
Nothing.
Nothing? It doesn't get weaker momentarily?
Oh, okay. Yes. Yes. That's the downside. During the flip, right in the moment, the instance of flip, which can, I don't know, that can last days to months. I'm not exactly sure. With the current rate of magnetic change, that flip may not be an actual full solid flip, and it may not last that long at all. But when it flips, the magnetic field on the planet dies a lot. And if anybody's been listening to the Better Weather in the Morning, you know that the Earth is constantly being buffeted with solar wind and cosmic rays, and our magnetic field protects us from these things big time. When that magnetic field starts to drop, that's like our shields going down. And let's see, machines are going to start having a lot more mistakes. Cancer rates are going to go up.
Won't more ozone be destroyed?
Not necessarily. I mean, some of it will be...
Isn't it cracked apart by high energy EM from the sun? Be it ultraviolet or gamma or X-ray.
It does, but for the most part, I believe, as far as I'm aware, it reassembles itself pretty quick. As long as we're not setting up a bunch of fluorocarbons and other freon and other crap like that, the hole is tiny and will stay that way and doesn't really matter. That's one of the few things we fixed. So it's not going to matter too much right now.
Maybe we'll see animals flying to the opposite poles for winter.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think about that.
Summer or like that. The theory of animals using the poles for navigation will get put to the test.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
There's like, well, go on Google Maps and see if the cows start lining up different. One of the phenomena people discovered from just, you know, not having lives and staring at Google Maps too long is that the cows, when they graze, orient themselves generally north to south.
One of the reasons you can't have astronauts in geostationary orbit is it's too far out and you don't get the protection of the magnetic poles, the magnetic fields that the Earth naturally generates. Mars doesn't have these fields, which is one of the reasons why it's crazy to go to Mars, because there's no protection. One of the researchers that was in my group discovered that, and this is for Brian, that poo could be used as a shield against the protons coming from the sun. So he suggested that in the space capsule that flies with people from Earth to Mars, that they as they excrete, they should just use the.
That's a real thing.
He got a grant. He ran some tests.
Tom, you're blowing my mind right now. I thought that was just a joke on the show Avenue 5, that they surround themselves with poo.
Well,
why not?
He said it was pretty good at absorbing the dangerous particles coming from the sun.
Well, yeah. That's because poo contains water, and water will do the same thing.
Yeah, so in this event that we temporarily lose the magnetic flux, what we should be doing is, you know...
building houses of poo.
Putting poo on a roof.
Burying ourselves.
Smear it on before you leave the house.
Amazing.
Don't forget your poo screen.
But that's also when it does a full reversal. Okay, that's when the magnetic field does the complete flip north to south.
Well, even when it does that quote unquote quickly, we're talking about quickly in geologic time frames, aren't we? This is like, you know, a quick magnetic flip. That's still, you know, minimum 100 years.
Yeah.
More likely, you know, a few hundred to 1,000.
According to our government, the time it takes for Earth's magnetic field to reverse polarity is approximately 7,000 years.
That's what I thought. Geologic timescales.
And it occurs differently at different latitudes.
Right.
But what we're seeing right now is other weird stuff. Like, this is like a magnetic disturbance that's flowing basically under the surface due to the roiling innards of the planet, causing new different magnetic patterns, not just the north-south stuff like a bar magnet. Right?
Yeah, it's not just one pole. There's a lot of complexity going on under the surface of the Earth that we just don't fully understand.
Okay. Well,
Corey, what are some clinch sci-fi history points that you want to get in real quick?
The only thing I was going to do was recommend a miniseries by Alex Garland, writer director of Ex Machina and Annihilation. He just did a miniseries Devs for FX and Hulu. And yeah, it was pretty good.
Boo, Devs, boo.
Joe didn't like it.
Joe doesn't like anything. Devs had me, I kind of liked it, and then they went all like weird, and then apparently nobody
metaphysical
liked it.
At the end. Well, I liked it, I was like, I say like, yeah, the second half maybe is a little weaker, but I still thought, it was pretty good.
What was the recommendation, though, that you
I'm just going to say, I thought Devs was good. Anybody wants to watch it? Yeah, it's up on Hulu and Amazon,
A lot of people like that. Listen to me.
Yeah, very good performance from Nick Offerman, from Ron Swanson from Parks and Rec. And, of course, you probably tell me something different, but it's like, compared to how I've seen, what I know about quantum computers, it seemed like they weren't at least using it as a hand wave, the sci-fi equivalent of a wizard did it, at least for most of it. There actually was some research put into it.
Well, yeah,
or at least closer to go on.
Well, that's the beautiful, sci-fi aspect. The AI can figure everything out. So this wonderful AI or this wonderful computer can figure out everything that we simple humans can't. And that's what we really are getting. The computers are getting smarter than us.
But a wizard didn't do it.
Yeah. That's about it. Yeah. Although, one other thing I'll say is that X-Files is kind of ape and Star Trek, and they're doing their own animated comedy spinoff called Albuquerque.
Lower Decks!
Yeah.
Lower Decks is great! I hate it! Lower Decks is fantastic, it's wonderful, it's great, go watch it.
I respectfully disagree. Take us out, Joe.
Don't listen to Cody! Listen to me! Go watch Lower Decks and check out Expanse when it comes back, too. That is some good sci-fi. Okay, we're going to round out the show right now. Now, this is sort of a round out because after the show, what we normally do is just keep on talking. We're going to transition to the after show as soon as I make sure that WGXC has taken us off air. Our stream will continue, so if you go to the WGXC.org website, you can keep listening to what we're going to keep talking about. And we're going to probably get controversial
No controversy here.
I don't know, Cody. You want to get into the mask bait later?
I mean, we can. I don't think we're going to disagree, though.
Okay, well, if anybody wants to hear about that, they're going to have to keep listening to the stream or maybe find this online later. That's when we're a little more free to be ourselves. Okay, you've been listening to the Thingularity Radio Program here on WGN.